Welcome to Inside Pop. I'm Amita Patel.
And I'm Sean David Johnson. This week, in honor of Women's History Month, we are counting down our top three favorite female friendships in pop culture.
And I got the opportunity to sit down with director and producer of a new documentary called Tickling Giants.
Can't wait to hear that conversation. And of course, we have another big sale for you this week. It's all ahead on Inside Pop. Happy Women's History Month, Amita Patel.
Oh, thanks. As a woman, I thank you.
Let's dive right into it. I'm so excited that all month, in honor of Women's History Month, we are going to celebrate different aspects of women in pop culture. We love pop culture. We love women. Let's do it. So we're going to start off this week with our top three, each of our top three favorite female friendships in pop culture.
This is a really difficult thing to kind of narrow down to three. I mean, if you think about, I think there's so much conversation about women and film and television and, like, you know, having a seat at the table and having, you know, power in Hollywood. If you guys ever have HBO and get a moment to see this amazing promo that they're putting out right now, and it's straight up just showing how many female-driven series that they have on their air right now. You know, like, Game of Thrones is Game of Thrones, but that series is very female-heavy. It's the characters are so strong on that. You know, shows like Insecure and Divorce and Girls. Like, sisters are doing it for themselves, and I couldn't be prouder, and I couldn't be more happy to have so many options. But when you're talking about pop culture as a whole, when you're talking about TV and movies, there's a lot.
There's a lot, which is good. And I think it's always about when there's so many, you get to explore different aspects of, and I think in this particular case, friendships with women. Because, I mean, we all know that there's the negative stereotype that women actually can't be good friends with each other, that women can't work together, that they backstab, and that there's this inherent competition, which is honestly, you know, an ugly stereotype, an ugly belief. And even if you do experience that on individual levels, you know, you definitely want to evolve past that. And I think, I don't know, pop culture can be little goalpost, right? Like, oh, I see that friendship. That's the kind of friendship I aspire to. I think that a lot of the choices I made are that for me. I think just friendship goals.
Yes. Squad goals.
Squad goals.
Yeah, I mean, and friendships can just not be two people like Laverne and Shirley or Thelma and Louise. You know, they can be groups of women like Girlfriends, which I thought was such an incredible series. If anybody's ever watched Girlfriends on BET, it was really great. So let's get into it. I don't know.
Well, so many. One patriarchal phrase, which I will embrace, ladies first, Amita. Why don't you begin? I want to hear your third favorite female friendship in pop culture.
I have a whole list here, guys. It's so hard to pick out which one's the third one because they all have like importance in some ways. And if we're only talking about characters, we're not talking about real women. Gail and Oprah are off my list, even though they're one of my favorite female friendships. So I think my first one is going to be the Golden Girls.
Thank you for being a friend.
Travel down the road and back again.
Now, why the Golden Girls?
I loved this show growing up. I thought it was such a funny show. And, you know, Sophia and Rose and Dorothy and Blanche, they just had such an incredible friendship and connection to each other. But more than that, you know, you didn't see it that often, like just these women sharing their experiences. Blanche was always, you know, having lovers left and right, and Sophia had her opinions all the time. And it was just an incredible celebration of these women who are of a, you know, an older age, but still realizing the strength of their relationship, which always brought them together. You know, it wasn't about the men and their relationships at all. Like, it was truly about them.
I love that choice. I love the fact that right, they were also older. They were senior citizens, but they were allowed to be sexual, and they were allowed to be flawed, and they were allowed to learn and continue to grow even at their age. And it was such a whip-smart show. I mean, all of the jokes, the one-liners, and how each of those characters became such archetypes. I love Golden Girls. Love that choice.
Thank you. And I think Golden Girls was top of mind because they just opened up this cafe in New York called Rue La Rue. Have you ever heard of it?
Oh, no, I saw a news report on it.
Yeah. It's true. Getting a lot of hype right now. It's Rue La Rue, and it's dedicated to Rue McClanahan, who was Blanche. And it's seriously, like, I haven't been, but I've seen some pieces about it. And it's like almost like a shrine to Rue McClanahan. And it has photos of her everywhere. Her Emmy is there in some corner. I really can't wait to go. But that's how iconic these actresses and these characters were. You know, like there's something about, we could go into a much bigger discussion about how 80s culture, there is something about 80s culture that was lasting, you know, and this is a very great example of that as a female friendship show.
Love it. They definitely set the standard. Love, 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 love your choice.
Thanks. What is yours?
My third favorite. I'll just say this. All of mine are TV. That just happened. But I'm going to go chronologically. So my third favorite is actually maybe the first female friendship that hit me when I was a young little boy watching syndicated television. These two made me laugh out loud hysterically. I'm talking about Lucy and Ethel.
Yes!
Lucy Ricardo and Ethel Mertz.
Oh, I'm so glad you put this on here. We didn't know each other's lists. We had a debate about knowing each other's lists before this. Oh my God, I love Lucy and Ethel.
Let's talk about their friendship. Lucy and all of her harebrained schemes. Ethel was ride or die. Ethel was always there. No matter, Ethel knew Lucy should not be trying to get into the club one more time. Ethel knew that Lucy should not pursue a career in show business. Ethel knew that, but she was always there to support her friend, kind of to try to talk her down, to try to protect her, and also just to have fun with her. Because I think Ethel knew that, listen, I'm married to Fred Mertz. Yes, we own a building. We're landlords, but I'm married to Fred Mertz. I need some adventure in my life. Where do I get this adventure? My friend Lucy Ricardo.
Oh, they are the best. I loved watching reruns of that show. It gave me so much joy. I love that you chose these guys.
Yeah. I mean, it was called I Love Lucy, but it was really the story of Lucy and Ethel. You know, especially as a kid, you know, Fred, I was just like, Ethel, really? Fred? He seems really joyless and, you know, not the most attractive guy.
He's pretty rigid,
Fred. Ricky just seemed kind of emotionally abusive. I'm reading too much into this now.
Wow,
But he was always crushing Lucy's dreams. Can you just let her be in the show? Anyway, but I feel like it was really the story of Lucy and Ethel and their friendship. And one bit of trivia, Vivian Vance, who played Ethel Mertz, was actually younger than Lucille Ball.
Oh, they made her seem so much older.
I know.
That's so. And P.S. Vivian Vance, what a name.
It's almost as kind of sultry and sexy as Ethel Mertz. I love Ethel Mertz. I think I love Ethel as much as I love Lucy, just the two of them together. So
yeah.
Lucy and Ethel, my number three pick. I'm smiling just thinking about them.
Oh my God, I know. I'm like, can we just stop and go watch an episode right now? I love, love, love that pick.
All right, Amita, number two, your second choice favorite female friendship in pop culture.
Number two, people will not be surprised if you know me and you've listened to the show. I am a huge Shondaland fan and have been since forever. So it was, and she is a genius at writing female characters. And so I had to put Meredith and Christina from Grey's Anatomy. Because you're my person.
They're each other's person. Oh, good choice. Loving these choices.
It's great. Like, you're my person. Like, people say that now in vernacular. Like, that's what you just say to somebody. And that's something that Shonda created. So, like, that's because... And she created that and probably wrote that line, but she created that sense and that feeling between these two characters. They had gone through everything imaginable and were there for each other through each piece. And even when Christina didn't want to, like, let up and, like, open up to Meredith for certain aspects of what she was going through, Meredith had, like, this sixth Christina sense. And she's like, no, we're not doing this. I'm your person. You're my person. This is happening. You need to deal with it. And yeah, I'm here to help you deal with it.
Yeah, they'd call each other out on their BS.
Yeah.
And I was so invested in that friendship that there was maybe one season where a good chunk of the season they were not friends. And that was really hard. You know that characters are being written well when they break up. It hurts and it's stressful.
Yes, I've blocked that season out of my mind.
I mean, it was almost an entire season where they weren't friends. And it
Why
just,
weren't they friends?
It was such an ugly, ugly feeling. It was tough. I think it was... It may have happened twice. But remember, there was one season towards the end of Christina Yang's run on the show where Christina Yang basically says that Meredith has lost her ambition and drive. You're having babies.
Oh,
you're doing
this
research, which is just kind of swirling around but not going anywhere. And basically she said, you're not a serious surgeon. You're not a shark anymore.
Yes.
And that really drove a rift through them, through that friendship.
But in Christina's way, she was challenging her as a woman.
As friends need to do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I love that. I love that they showed that in that way. But it was hard.
It was hard. And I think my investment in that friendship is illustrated by the fact that I did make this decision to stop watching Grey's at the end of the season where Christina Yang leaves. I feel like in some ways I just felt like, okay, that the story is done. You know, kind of like Lucy and Ethel, like the show's really about them. I think for me, like in many ways, the Grey's Anatomy, or at least let's say like the first era of Grey's Anatomy, was about not McDreamy and Meredith, but really that show was centered around the friendship of Christina and Meredith. I know the show's still on and it's still great. Let's just call it the second era of Grey's. But for me, that first era of Grey's is about Christina and Meredith.
Mm-hmm. Oh, 100%. I know that's a great way of kind of categorizing this series that still is a huge hit and is going on for who knows how much longer. But I still watch it, just so you guys know. Anybody likes Grey's, we can talk about it.
Call her.
Call me. All right. So what do you have as number two on your top favorite female friendship in pop culture?
Well, I definitely wanted to choose female friendship of women of color. That was important for me for this list. And when I made that decision, the answer came quite easily. In a 90s kind of world, I'm glad I've got my friends.
Yes. We are living single.
I'm talking about Khadija, Sinclair, Maxine, and Regine. The women of Living Single. I loved this show so much in the 90s.
Good one.
I mean, just, it was, you know, everyone talks about how empowering and wonderful seeing the Huxtables on TV was in the 80s. So true. There was something equally powerful and empowering about, like, for me, being around the same age as those characters and seeing Black people working, being successful, striving for their goals, dealing with a lot of bougie concerns, which we should all be entitled to have bougie concerns. And those four characters were just so funny and likable, and they're the best. The women of Living Single, the friendship that those four had was pretty special.
You're so good. Sinclair, though. Sinclair.
I love Sinclair. She was my favorite. If I'm going to play favorites, I love Sinclair.
Oh, who didn't love Sinclair? Come on.
Woo, woo, woo. Woo, woo, woo.
And I mean, we've discussed doing this eventually, but that was a really great theme song.
Oh yeah, we have to count down our favorite theme songs. That's up there. That's top 10 for sure. For sure.
Yeah.
And it's great. I mean, it's four of them, and I like the fact that they had this group friendship, but like in real life, there were different friendships between the two, you know. Max and Regine had a volatile friendship.
Mm-hmm.
Khadija and Sinclair were cousins and had that we've known each other for our entire lives friendship. Max and, you know, it's like all four, you know, all the permutations, the writers created really unique relationships between all of them.
Definitely. Definitely. I love that choice. That's a great show. I need to go watch that again.
Yeah, I hope it holds up. I bet it would. I think just for nostalgia, it would. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. For the wardrobe alone.
Oh, the 90s. Oh, Afrocentric 90s. I miss you. I miss you. Where's my cowrie shell necklace? I'm going to find it. Okay. Amita, the time has come. Your number one choice.
So when you think of a female friendship that kind of sticks with you, and you, whenever you revisit it, it's still just as emotional and strong as ever. This always, it's like baseline this. It would be Cece Bloom and Hillary Whitney from Beaches.
Classic.
Yes. I happened to revisit this movie recently. It was actually for a project that I worked on. So I got to watch the original, and it's just such an incredible story of friendship. It really is. And throughout, it plots from when they were teenagers, children, you know, actually, I think younger than teenagers, you know, they were children. And then they stayed in touch, and then they came into each other's lives, and they were so different. They were not what you would typically think as people who would be friends with each other. Cece was so outrageous and a performer and so extroverted. And Hillary was so reserved and conservative and proper. And yet somehow their friendship literally stood the test of time. And then, I mean, the end of this film, the act of true friendship, you know, being there in your unfortunate weakest hour and then agreeing, and this is not a spoiler alert, y'all should have seen Beaches by now, okay?
Right,
and
exactly.
If you haven't, you should have seen the remake, but it's okay if you haven't, because I have thoughts on that. But either way, like to sit there and say, I will take care of your daughter because you are dying,
mm-hmm.
and because I am your best friend in the world and I know you better than anybody else, that's it. That's right there. That's your girl. That's your ride or die. That is your friend.
One thing we haven't talked about, but Beaches definitely makes me think about it, is the fact that here we are, a woman and a gay man, talking about favorite female friendships. And I think there is something in pop culture about how gay men become invested in strong female characters and female friendships. And it really strikes a chord with us, almost as much as it strikes a chord with women. But, you know, Beaches and Steel Magnolias and Fried Green Tomatoes, those are movies about female friendships, but that are also kind of these classic gay movies that gay men really love as well. And I don't know, I'm not sure if I have an answer to it, but I don't know. What do you think? There's something that gay men really do appreciate and, I don't know, in a way, idolize, or sometimes I think maybe we put on pedestal, put these strong women and these strong friendships on a pedestal.
Well, because I think they're strong women, but they have real emotion. You know, they are vulnerable as well, and they show their vulnerability most with female friends. I can speak specifically, you know, from my experience. I am most vulnerable with my female friends mm-hmm. than, you know, my gay male friends sometimes, and with, you know, my male friends as well. Like it happens to be that you can be your truest self, I feel, with a woman, because there is an inherent understanding and inherent empathy that a woman can give to a woman that not all men can do.
I think that's a great point. I guess I think, you know, even as gay men, we're still raised as boys and men in the society where you're taught not to be super vulnerable and super emotional. And I think it takes us a while. You try to learn to be. So yeah, I think when, you know, in real life, but also in TV and film, when I see, you're so right. When I see women being open and totally vulnerable and supportive in that way, yeah, like it's aspirational.
It is. You know, like you were saying, Steel Magnolias, I should have put that on my list. I love that film too. That we should have made it a top 10 because there's, I mean, that's a great example, you know, like I think I mentioned Thelma and Louise earlier, Waiting to Exhale. What an incredible film dedicated to female friendship. You know, like there are so many more examples that we couldn't encapsulate into this countdown right now. But it's the fact that there are so many means that it is something to be discussed. It's something that people want to see. It's something that's, frankly, when you talk about Hollywood, it's marketable because the female, you know, audience, we come out, do this, we want to come out and we want to support this because we are supportive, because we want to see our stories being told. And I think they're always going to continue to be told because of the connection that we can always make with that story.
Yeah, you show up.
Yep.
All right, so let me try to segue into my number one choice.
I completely know. I think I know.
I think you probably do know. And listen, everyone, including Amita, this is. I'm trying not to be a cliche. I'm trying not to be redundant or repetitive. I want to be surprising. But all that said, I have very good reasons to share with you my number one choice, favorite female friendship in pop culture, for me, beyond a shadow of a doubt, from the town of Sunnydale.
Yep.
Willow Rosenberg and Buffy Summers.
I knew it.
You don't know me.
Listen, here's the thing. I know you, first of all. We have to play that game again, because I know you. Two, I don't think it's predictable of you to say that. Like, you're a huge fan of the series, so I would expect this of you.
Oh, thank you.
And I don't know the series. I haven't watched it. So I love that you chose this, because now, Sean David Johnson, please enlighten me as to why this is your number one choice.
So many reasons. I'll give you some bullet points. I think the show was on for 7 seasons, and every season, that friendship developed and grew just as the two characters grew. You know, I think you first see them, they're juniors in high school, and then by season 7, they've like gone, you know, they're graduated through college, and they fought many demons and vampires and witches throughout their time together. But the friendship grew and was quite often tested. So I love the fact that, like so many of the other friendships we've talked about, there were times where they turned on each other. There were times where Buffy Summers, who is the only Slayer, you know, the weight of that kind of caused her to lash out at her friends, and she pushed people away. And there were pockets of time where she and Willow were not close. There was a season where Willow actually became really evil, and they actually had to battle each other. And of course, it's all metaphor for what happens in real friendships. But then there were actually kind of real life things as well. There's a devastating episode, maybe one of the best episodes and best run storyline arcs, where Buffy's mother dies. And it doesn't get more real than that. It's played, she's not killed by a demon. It's actually a medical thing that happens. And Willow is there for her in a very powerful way. Willow comes out, and Willow's in college, and she comes out as a lesbian. And it's played so well. You know, and it's interesting, Buffy isn't the first person to find out. So there's that whole issue of like coming out, and who do you tell first, and how do your friends react? And that's explored in their friendship. So for me, it is the fact that lots of kind of supernatural metaphors that touch upon different aspects of friendship, but then also the real things that those two go through. And they're very different. But one thing that's nice is they're friends in high school and they maintain that friendship as they grow leaps and bounds. And that doesn't always happen, right? I've lost a lot of friendships from high school. I've just drifted apart from friends I've had in college and friends I've had in different workplaces. So again, I think when you talk about aspiration, there's something aspirational to me about how Buffy and Willow were able to maintain a friendship despite how they both drastically changed, despite the fact that they were always trying to keep those demons from climbing up out of the Hellmouth. They kept it together. So they really are my friendship goal.
I love it. Sean, can we not drift from each other, please?
Never.
Because I was a friend from your work, and I don't want to be one of those people.
No, okay. That'll never happen.
Okay.
Yes. Even if you become possessed by the first, who is the first evil, and we still wouldn't drift apart. I wouldn't allow that to happen.
Thanks, Sean.
No problem.
I think we've reached our friendship goal.
Yes.
Oh, this is such a fun countdown. Upon mentioning so many other great friendships within it, I'm like, oh, I should have added more. Like, we should have done five because, yeah, Steel Magnolias.
I know.
Gives me life.
Well, when you said Waiting to Exhale, maybe we should have divided this TV and film. But you know what? We can always revisit it. We can always do top female friendships again.
Yeah, because there's enough of them. Right. We should have done TV and film. That was my fault, I think.
But yeah, so this is definitely something we'll revisit. And please, why don't you guys tweet us and let us know what you think of our choices. And I'm sure there are other friendships that we're not even thinking of. So tweet us at Pop Insiders and let us know your favorite female friendship.
Up next, I had the great privilege to host a Q&A at a Producers Guild screening of a first look documentary called Tickling Giants last summer. I actually connected with the director before the screening, and we ended up finding out we had a lot of friends in common that were both Jersey girls. So we kind of just instantly connected and had a great bond. So I asked her whenever her doc was actually going to get more distribution and released widely to, you know, let me know, and hopefully I can share it with the masses. And so finally... Finally, months later, we can actually discuss this documentary, which I cannot wait to share with all of you guys, especially because in the political climate that we are now in the midst of and become witness to, this documentary is actually more important than ever. So I'm happy to share the interview that I did with Sarah Taxler. I am here with the director, producer, writer, and executive producer of the incredible documentary Tickling Giants, Sarah Taxler. Welcome, Sarah.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for doing this with us. I'm so excited. We have been talking for months about trying to get together because we're neighbors,
right.
But also to be able to do this interview. And let's just get started and discuss, what is Tickling Giants about?
Tickling Giants is the story of this guy named Bassem Youssef, who a lot of people have seen when he's been on The Daily Show a few times. And he's an Egyptian guy who was a heart surgeon and during the Arab Spring decided to make a comedy show with his friend. And it wound up being one of the biggest comedy shows ever in the history of television. And he had 30 million viewers per episode versus a show like The Daily Show, which had about 2 million per episode under Jon Stewart. And the show really took off. And then the movie is about his fight for free speech in a country where free speech is not settled law. So not everyone agrees that you should be allowed to make jokes about politics and the president and religion and government. And so the story follows how Bassem and his team try to find creative and nonviolent ways to fight for free speech and also to stop a president who abuses his power.
This all sounds eerily familiar right now, Sarah.
I know. When I was making it, I had no idea that it would be this relevant in the U.S. I could not have imagined. Yeah, so I've obviously watched the movie 1,000 times and then... Now I try to not watch it too much unless I'm at a screening so that it can be fresh again for me and I can try to pick up new things. And when I watched the movie right after the election, I hadn't seen it in a few months, and we were at a film festival, and someone in a comment after the screening said, "This is a warning for the U.S. that this, this is what could happen here." And this was the election; Trump wasn't president yet. But I can't believe some of it is happening now in terms of the press, and also just in terms of the people in this movie. Some of them have left the country of Egypt because it wasn't safe to speak freely, or my cinematographer couldn't be a documentary filmmaker in Egypt anymore. There's a lot of creative people who can't do their jobs or live their lives freely, or at least the way they'd like to. And some of the people who worked on the movie, like my assistant editors, are political refugees in the US. And now I'm like, these are the kinds of people we're talking about when we talk about a Muslim ban or things like that. Like,
Yeah.
fun, just nice, funny, normal people. And it's crazy that now in my country, this is an issue also.
Yeah, I when we spoke in August, we were saying I was like, I hope this you get this movie out. I hope you get distribution and you can get it out before the election. It seems so topical for that. And I don't think that you or I ever thought that Trump would win. And then the sequence of events of the last 2 months for now to think that this is even more relevant now.
Yeah, exactly. I actually wrote an email a few days after the inauguration to a guy I've become friends with, who's one of the people in the movie, and I just asked him for advice. And I was like, "How do you deal with this?" Like, his country didn't feel quite so off his kilter either until 5 years ago, and so he was just basically like, "All these things existed. You just didn't know they were there." And now you're aware of it, and you can either be overwhelmed and not participate, or if you can figure out how to articulate yourself and what you think is important, you can be part of the discourse. So I'm trying to keep that in mind and be like, yeah, okay, America is great and screwed up in a lot of ways, and it was before. I just didn't know it because I wasn't one of the people who was targeted by those things that were screwed up, and now I know it. And I mean, like a lot of people, it's overwhelming to figure out what to do. But for me, Tickling Giants isn't just the movie title. It's like what I hope people will do with the information. So obviously, throughout our history, culturally, there are like musicians and artists and people who speak out about civil injustice through creative ways, and whether it's telling jokes or writing a song or whatever else. And so, like, I want people to think about that in terms of what they could do in their own lives. So how could you be tickling giants in your own world, like big or small? It doesn't have to be the president or the government. Like, in your own day-to-day life, like, who's taking advantage and how can you find a creative way to stop that from happening?
Definitely. I mean, I think that you found your creative way in this film right now.
Yeah, absolutely. That's yeah, sometimes when I'm feeling overwhelmed by all of it, I'm like, well, hopefully when people see the movie, there'll be some little change that happens for them, or feel a little bit inspired or comforted or motivated to do something.
I know I did. I definitely was when I saw this. So, I would love to talk to you a little bit about like producing the film. You know, for a little bit of background on Sarah, she is a senior producer at The Daily Show here in New York. So you've been there for years, and that is how you met Bassem, right?
Right. Yeah. So I've been at The Daily Show since 2005. And in 2012, Bassem and his team came to observe our show before they went live, before a studio audience. And in my memory, I don't ever remember having anyone else come in just for the purpose of observing us. And so it was fun. Everyone was like, "Oh, who are these guys? Like, what are they up to?" And Bassem is a very charismatic guy. And the first thing that I found really intriguing was, oh, this guy has to do what we do every day, but with such higher stakes. And at the time, it was impossible for me to imagine having a president who would try to stop you from making a joke or something like that. And so I was really curious about that. And then so we all started talking, and two of the producers who came with him are women. And a lot of times people ask me, what's it like to be a woman working in comedy? And I was just really curious what it would be like to be my counterpart in Egypt. And I had my own preconceived notions that turned out to be incorrect. Like the office is very split between men and women, and women being involved creatively and in production. But anyway, so we were all talking, and then I was debating whether I should ask them if I could make a documentary because I just loved the story, but it was so impulsive. Like I'd met them a couple hours earlier, and I was trying to convince a friend at work that he should go with me to Egypt, and he was like, "No way, I have my own stuff going on." And then I was just like, "I don't want to let the opportunity pass." And I had recently been dumped, so I think leaving the country felt like a very genius idea. And I was just debating a bunch of stuff, and so I went up to Bassem at the end of the first day, and I asked if I could make a movie about him, and he was like, "Sure." And then I was just like, what have I done?
That's incredible,
I'm
though.
scared. It was. And he, I mean, I think neither of us knew what that meant because the show wasn't the huge hit it later became. We didn't know how big the story would become. But then I sat on it for a while because I was scared to go, and the US State Department wasn't encouraging travel that wasn't absolutely necessary.
Right. This is back
And
in
then
June 2012, right?
June 2012, and then a few months later, Bassem was called in for questioning about jokes he had made about the president, and I just thought that was outrageous. And I was like, I have access to this story, and I felt like I could do justice to the story. And so I called him again. I called Bassem again, and just said, "This time I'm serious. Can I make a movie?" And he said, "Yes." I hired a local crew to start filming. And then started making trips there.
So I guess that I'd love to dive deeper into that. Like you just made trips to Egypt. That first of all, it's not that easy to do. And how are you able to balance that whilst working on The Daily Show and having a full-time job and then being there for enough time to capture what you needed to capture to piece this documentary together?
Well, so there are a bunch of steps to it. One was the crew started filming before I'd ever even been there, so I didn't know what to suggest. And then I was supposed to go there, and then the political climate wasn't great, and Bassem's publicist suggested I wait. She didn't think it was a good time for me to make my first trip. So they were still filming, but I hadn't been there yet. So it was sort of just random filming without a focus because I didn't know what my story would be. And then I went over there for a few weeks, and I actually had a great experience. Like some of it was kind of overwhelming because I was a woman and I was by myself, and I'm white, so it's not like it's obvious that I'm not from Egypt originally. And but I was in their office for 90% of the time, basically when I wasn't sleeping. So I felt comfortable. Like everyone was really cool. They were just kind of the counterparts of my office back home. And it was like if I lived in Egypt, these were the people I'd be friends with. So I felt very well taken care of. Not sure when I left what the story was yet, but I knew it was just kind of the backstory of making the show. And basically throughout the course of the movie, there's a lot of curveballs thrown at the team in terms of just people who don't think they should be on the air. And so a lot of the story becomes about that. And on a different visit when I was there, it was extremely tense. And I was shooting second camera, and I had to stop filming because like my hand was shaking. So I just like there were th just I'd never been in situations like that. And most of the people in the office hadn't either. But because the last few months there had been so tense, they were getting used to it. People get desensitized pretty quickly. And then, like, while there were protests at the office, they asked me to not go outside and film, to have a camera person do it because I clearly wasn't from there. Some people thought I might incite a negative reaction. Like, there were people who thought I was a spy, or that Bassem was working with the US government, or things, just a lot of conspiracy theories. And so they were like, it's better off if I'm not shooting certain things myself. So we had to work around those things, and I was very careful to like check with some friends if any of this was being reported at home because I wanted to know if I had to tell my family or not. Yeah, and then in terms of balancing it all with work, that's difficult. The movie became nights and weekends and vacations. So I was working 7 days a week for maybe a year and a half.
Wow.
And that was definitely a challenge to have a full-time job on top of a full-time job.
Yeah.
But my office has been very supportive, and they know Bossum
Of
also, which
course,
I think,
right.
so they also care about the story, and so yeah, they've been very supportive.
Yeah, I mean that definitely is a nice silver lining that you are working at a place that he is kind of imitating is not the best word for it, but he is, you know,
Definitely
taking
inspired by.
inspired by it, right? And if you guys when you watch the documentary, because you must watch the documentary, you'll see like he
Seriously.
does really model the show. Like the set looks very similar to the Daily Show. Like he looks, I mean, he has a very incredible personality. He is so funny and just so animated. So you're immediately taken by Bassem from the minute you see him on screen. And I think that's why he became so successful. What did you say? 30 million people.
Yeah, I mean he is one of those like X factor personalities that
Yeah.
you hear about. His friend Tarek, who had the idea to start a show originally on YouTube, was like, "I want to make a show. I don't know what it should be, but you should host it." Just
Yeah.
'cause people like the kind of person who's just a great guest at a dinner
Yeah, I was
party.
just gonna say, you want him at your party.
Yeah.
Like,
Taking notes when he'd watch episodes, and so the early episodes really are very much based off the Daily Show.
yeah, his humor is weaved throughout this entire documentary, which at times the documentary feels really heavy because they had so much resistance and they were pulled off the air on one network and then were put on another, and then you know you had so many times where they were shut down. But they didn't give up. And those moments were the moments that I felt were just so devastating because all they were trying to do was something that's so freely done here. You know, any comedian can go on Twitter, on Facebook, and be on the Daily Show and be on, do their stand-up comedy somewhere and say whatever the heck they want. And in this country, you know, there are much larger consequences for something like that.
Yeah, the tagline for Tickling Giants is, "Are you brave enough to tell a joke?" And it's because it's something that, to me and to lots of people I know and lots of people in the Western world, what's the big deal? You tell a joke and maybe it bombs and no one laughs, but that's the biggest repercussion. And when you're in a society that doesn't have the same level of free speech, it can be a true act of bravery to tell a joke. And satire is meant to challenge authority, whoever is in charge. It's not about a side or a party. It's just about accountability. And you know, that's what we're seeing in this country now, that if a press or a comedy scene wants to hold the people in charge accountable, there's such a sensitivity increase. And I mean, no one likes being made fun of, but like,
Right.
you're a public figure. So yeah, the people who worked for Bossum Show were putting their lives on the line in a lot of cases. And there were so many examples. You know, we couldn't get into all of them in the movie, but there were people on staff who were called in for questioning and writers who had to go to court. And they're because they wrote jokes. I mean, it was literally that simple that they were being charged with being anti-government for making jokes.
Right. It's so unheard of here, but at the same time, right now specifically, it's.
Yeah, I mean, I think it tells us. One, I mean, I'll say, so one of the most interesting things in terms of response to the film to me has been I expected or hoped, but expected that liberals would like the film. And I've been shocked by the reaction with a lot of conservatives and libertarians who really love the film because a lot of them are also not happy about what's going on in the country right now. And they value the First Amendment and
Right.
value speech and freedom of the press. And like, I think right now is the time to be like, hey, whatever your background is, whatever your politics are, if this is important to you, be vocal about it and unify and send a clear message that you want newspapers to be allowed to cover the president regardless of his opinion of them. Or you want you like if a free press is important, then you stand for it, whether or not they're saying things that you like.
Exactly. It's just like, right, because it doesn't matter if they are telling different stories or if they support different beliefs about what's going on in government. they're about free press.
Right.
Everybody has the right here to do that. And in Egypt, that's not the case. Also, you just recently won an award in Berlin for your documentary, which I thought
Yes.
was amazing. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Thank you. We were one of the films recognized at Cinema for Peace in Berlin with a Most Valuable Documentary Award, which was really fun. They have their ceremony at the Reichstag, which is the German Parliament building, which was very cool and also just a good example of how cultures can shift over time. It's cool that you can be in Germany in 2017 and the focus is purely about social justice and finding peace in the world. And that was a
Wow,
nice
yeah.
thing to see right now.
Definitely. How was like the reception of the people? Have you met you met did you meet a lot of people in that room who had seen the documentary, and what was their
Yeah,
reception?
that was great. That was very cool. We met a bunch of people who'd seen the film and loved the film. And Bassem actually has a big following in Germany. There's a
Oh.
network there called Deutsche Welle that would play his show the next day after it aired in Egypt. So it was actually really funny. We were walking down the street in Berlin. It was freezing cold out. He's bundled up in like a hat and a scarf, and someone's honking their horn like, "Ah, Bassem Youssef,
Oh my
Bassem."
God.
And I was like, you can like barely see his face. You know, there's 3 inches showing, but his eyes are very recognizable. He has very blue eyes. So even there, and that's actually like a fun thing in New York walking around with him. He gets recognized a lot. And a lot of times it'll be in New York City, like people who have the halal food carts a
Oh my
lot of times,
God.
his,
Yes.
like part of his kind of core constituency. And so you'll be walking down the street with him and people are just offering him water bottles or like a token of thanks to say thanks for what you've done. And
Wow.
it's very sweet to see how many people he's affected.
Yeah, definitely. Wow, that's amazing. All right, so let's get to the most important part of this interview. Please tell people where they can find more information about this film and how they can see it.
So Tickling Giants, if you go to ticklinggiants.com, all the screening information is there. We'll be in New York at the IFC Center starting March 15th. We'll be in 16 cities across the US at Landmark Theaters for one night on March 21st. And we will be in Los Angeles at the Lemley Music Hall in Beverly Hills on April 7th for a week. And then, in addition to that, at ticklinggiants.com, if you want to bring the film to your campus or to a community screening, just fill out the form there that says host a screening, and we have a screening team that will get right in touch with you. And we are very excited. We're doing about 150 educational screenings right now, and hopefully we'll have more to come.
That's
So,
awesome.
yeah, and there's a grant for schools that can't afford to bring the film to their campus. There, we can help out with that. So, if you're interested in seeing the movie, there's a way to see it. And in the spring, hopefully we'll have more opportunities for people to see the movie online. So, keep track on ticklinggiants.com. We'll have updates there.
Are you going to be at any of the screenings in New York or LA?
Yes. So the first weekend in New York, I will be at from Wednesday on, I'll be at all of the evening screenings. And on the weekend, Saturday and Sunday, I'll be at all the screenings.
Okay.
And in Los Angeles, Bassem will be at a few of the screenings the opening weekend.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome. I'm definitely going to try to come to one of the screenings because I want to see the movie again. I'm going to try to bring a bunch of friends, and I definitely want to meet
Thank you. Yeah,
Bassem.
everyone you know. Everyone listening, please check out the film and spread the word for, I'm sure if you listen to this podcast, you already know, but for independent films, word of mouth is a huge thing. So if you're interested in Tickling Giants, please check it out. And also I would just say one of the biggest things we hope with the film, like I was saying earlier, is I hope people will figure out ways to tickle giants in their own lives. And they're just use the hashtag tickling giants and let us know what you're doing so we can hopefully inspire more people to do that.
I love it. I love it. I love this film. I love this, message, and I like the action item to take this into your own life and do something bigger and better in kind of a larger space than yourself.
Yeah,
So
you tickle giants with your podcast, it seems like. You
I'm
talk about
trying
important issues.
to.
You're tickling giants, so.
Yay. So, we are also recording this episode, and it's going to be out in Women's History Month, and we're doing a bunch of Women's History Month themed pop culture episodes for the month of March. So, there's such a huge conversation right now about female power in Hollywood and some of the lack of female voices that are in Hollywood, but be it behind the camera and in front of the camera and at studios, you know, for you to be able to write, direct, produce, you know, and really execute this documentary is on a larger scale and more incredible as a woman. And regardless of the fact that this documentary has such a larger message than that, I applaud you for being able to kind of, you know, execute all of this and be able to do that. You know, it's inspiring to me as a producer as well to see that it's possible.
Thank you from me and from the woman part of me. Both parts.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Sarah. It was such a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you very much. This was a lot of fun.
Great.
Amita, that was a great interview. I loved that in-depth conversation you had with such a talented producer.
Thank you. I had such a great time talking to Sarah, so I'm so glad that you enjoyed it and hope everybody else does too.
Honestly, I am completely inspired to see this film for the first time, and I'd love to see it with you. Shall we make plans to try to see it when it opens in New York?
Yes, please. I definitely want to see it again because I saw it so long ago, and I want to bring some more people to show support for a really great documentary.
Yeah, so once again, this film actually cannot receive too much promotion. Tickling Giants, definitely check your listings. Check this movie out if it comes to your town. And I was excited to hear her say that at some point it will be available streaming, because we have to remember that not everyone lives in a metropolitan area like ours. So sometimes you have to rely on streaming to see great things like this. So everyone should be on the lookout.
Yay.
Yay. Okay. Well, I'm ready for our next segment, which is, of course, The Big Sell.
For those of you who may not know, The Big Sell is a segment we do every week where one of us sells the other on something that we're enjoying in pop culture, and then they come back with a rating and review the following week. So last week, I sold Sean David Johnson a couple of songs from an artist called Sanabo Say. And they're not actually new singles. They're actually from a couple of years ago, but I came across her from our mutual friend, James Barker, and kind of really enjoyed her sound. And I sold her to you, Sean. What did you think?
First of all, have you heard from James, aka DJ Chaotic? Have you heard from him about my suggestion that he change his DJ name to DJ Big Sell?
I have told him about the suggestion. It is under advisement.
Okay. Appreciated. I appreciate that consideration.
He'd probably have to change all of his social media just for that if he changed it from DJ Chaotic
to DJ Big Sell.
Yes.
As always, James, feel free to completely ignore us, but, you know, DJ Big Sell, it has a ring to it. Okay. Well, I thank you and DJ Chaotic for that great recommendation. I really, really enjoyed those two songs you big sold.
Yay! I'm so glad.
Really loved it. I will admit to you, I listened to these two songs in my house, in my living room. I believe the blinds were drawn, coincidentally, when I heard
dramatic.
The two songs. So I might have danced a little bit when I heard these two songs.
What
I will not tell you is how often I have a dance party with my two cats in my living room. That isn't because I think people just think of me as so cool that I don't want to have that lessen, you know, the image that I've been projecting for the past year and a half on this podcast.
No, I mean, God forbid they know you have a daily cat dance party.
It's weekly, Amita.
Oops.
Not daily. Anyway, back on track. I really love these songs, and I was thinking about how I wanted to convey how much I enjoyed the songs and the singer. And the first thing that struck me was there are a lot of singers who, and I think it's like the American idolization of singing where, you know, every note has to be made into five notes, and there has to be a lot of vocal acrobatics. And one of the things that I loved about the singer is that it wasn't about showing off her voice or taking one note and turning it into 10. There was just something so soulful and beautiful about her voice that she just needed to sing the song with her natural soul and talent. And that was enough for her and definitely enough for me. So definitely want to listen to a whole album. Definitely want to go out somewhere where her song is being played as a dance track and dance to her.
So did you prefer, so that I'm assuming you preferred Pretend a little bit more than Hard Time?
Well, no, I mean, I guess I was drawn to the up, more upbeat, yeah. But I liked both.
Okay, good.
Yeah. So really, yes, really enjoyed her a lot.
So what is your rating?
Well, I conferred with my two cats because they also enjoyed dancing to her. And collectively, we're giving her 3 1/4 stars.
Wow, lovely.
Yeah.
Is the quarter star from Memphis or from Nash? Right.
Debatable.
Okay. Oh, I'm really, really glad that you enjoyed her. And I'm also going to do the same and try to explore more of her songs and albums. And hopefully maybe she's putting out new music and we can enjoy that as well. So,
yeah. And I'll just say that I was trying to think of like, oh, who can I say that she reminds me of? But I think her voice just is so unique. I don't really have a comparison.
Yeah, it was hard. You know, it's because the combination of her voice and the style of music is not a combination I hear often. So I think that's why it's difficult for me to also pinpoint somebody she's similar to.
Yeah, but she's great. I highly recommend her. 3 1/4 stars. Do it. If you own cats, make sure you do it. They love her.
So if you own a dog, no?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure.
May not be dog friendly. Sorry, Sinabose, but... All right. Well, what do you have to sell for me this week, Sean?
Well, this week, Amita, I decided to put some effort into not selling music, even though we've agreed that we both love and live for music. I wanted to try to change it up a little bit. So I have an Amazon series to sell to you. First episode only, so not the entire series.
Okay.
Okay, so if we think back to a couple of months ago when I made my pop culture resolutions, I decided to try more pop culture from other countries, and I've been listening and watching a lot of British programming and content.
Okay.
They also speak English, so that makes things easy. And I came upon, I think, Norman, our friend, he recommended this to me. And again, he never steers me wrong when it comes to pop culture. So this is an amazing series called Fleabag.
Oh, I've heard of this.
Fleabag is a... it's a super short season. It's only 6 episodes. And I'll just tell you now, I wanted and needed more, but all I got was 6 episodes. But essentially, it's a story of a young woman. I think she's probably in her late 20s, early 30s. Single woman living in England. And the things I can say about the show... she's not entirely happy. She has a friend with whom she opened up a bakery, coffee shop. The friend has died. She has a sister who she loves, but they have what is the opposite of a close relationship. And she enjoys sex with lots of different men. Also, she breaks the fourth wall and... quite often speaks to the viewer directly and comments on what she's going through, whether it's a date, whether she's in the middle of having sex, whether she's having about to have an argument with her sister. She's speaking directly to you. And you know, that's a device that's been used a lot, but the way it's mm-hmm. used in this show feels fresh and new and necessary. I've never wanted to hear a character. I've never wanted to hear their actual thoughts and actual feelings and honest feelings more than I have in the show. So it's refreshing. It's so funny, but also so sad. And and the woman who stars in the show is a revelation. She's so great. She's really pretty. She's funny. She's sardonic. She's an anti-hero. She's so many of the things that I like in TV. So I'm not sure, Mita, how you're going to react to this episode. But
okay.
But I'm big selling it in the spirit of it really captivated me. You know, I don't like binge watching, but I binge watched all 6 episodes within a week.
Whoa!
So I'm big selling this to you in hopes that you like it, but not sure that you'll like it. But okay. Again, I think I'm taking a little experiment with the big sell. I'm curious. I feel like it could go either way. So let's see what happens.
I've heard about this series from a couple of different people recently too. So I think the bar is already kind of a little high. Like, okay, people are talking about it, so I want to check it out. So thank you for making me check it out. And it's interesting that she breaks the fourth wall because some memorable ones have come and gone. You know, like people have tried that device in series. Like Sex and the City at the very beginning broke the fourth wall, and House of Cards did very often.
Yes.
And it's definitely reduced it over the last couple seasons.
Oh, interesting.
And Saved by the Bell did it too.
Okay. Cool your jets.
So
you just mentioned Saved by the Bell and House of Cards in the same paragraph.
I was just trying to get a laugh out of you. All right. Oh, cool. I will check this out and let you know what I think. Thank you for this sell.
I'm so curious and excited because, I'll say it one more time, I think this could go either way. Dun, dun, dun.
Scared. Okay. All right, well, that's our show for now. Please make sure to use social media for good and stay in touch with us, please.
You can find us at Pop Insiders on Twitter and Instagram. You can find Amita's awesome collages. You can tweet at us and we'll respond. We'll always follow you back if you follow us, and we'll always respond if you tweet at us. So definitely join the conversation.
Yes. And of course, always go to our website, insidepoppodcast.com, and you can subscribe to the podcast, read our show notes, get additional pop culture goodness in our links and old episodes, and find out a little bit more about the two of us.
There's a lot to know. And then also, if you have a moment, hop on over to iTunes and rate and review the show. It helps other people find us, and we want to continue reaching out to new listeners and expand the reach of Inside Pop. So help us with that evil plan.
Yes, please.
Coming up next week, we're going to have another Women's History Month themed countdown. We're going to touch upon another aspect of women in pop culture. It's another chance for us to stress out about choosing the right top 3.
Oh my gosh, there's so much stress.
But it's fun. So, yeah. So more women in pop culture coming up next week on Inside Pop.
Have a great week, guys. Bye.